This is the Gospel of Jesus Christ according to Mark, the first chapter. As soon as Jesus and the disciples left the synagogue, they entered the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. Now Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever, and they told him about her at once. He came and took her by the hand and lifted her up. Then the fever left her, and she began to serve them. That evening at sunset, they brought to him all who were sick or possessed with demons, and the whole city was gathered around the door, and he cured many who were sick with various diseases and cast out many demons. And he would not permit the demons to speak because they knew him. In the morning, while it was still very dark, he got up and went out to a deserted place, and there he prayed. And Simon and his companions hunted for him. When they found him, they said to him, "Everyone is searching for you." He answered, "Let us go on to the neighboring towns, so that I may proclaim the message there also, for that is what I came out to do." And he went throughout Galilee, proclaiming the message in their synagogues and casting out demons. This is the gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. So Mark's gospel follows Jesus from the last town into this one and then on to the next. Everything happens immediately or as soon as in what Mark paints as a beeline between the beginning of Jesus' ministry and the cross. Matthew and Luke don't paint it as such a direct line, but for Mark, Jesus came specifically to do battle with the devil, and it is the cross and not the desert that will be the arena in which that happens. On the march from baptism to that moment, the gospel narrative is right there with Jesus the whole way, as it should be. The good news that we have to share, which is what the word gospel means, is that God, who created all things, became one of us in the person of Jesus Christ, lived as one of us, suffered as one of us, died as one of us, and was resurrected in what is promised to be as one of us. That's the story that Mark and also Matthew and Luke and even John were endeavoring to tell. It's the story that we, as people of faith, have to share. That story is the core of who we are as a people of faith. We shouldn't let it be obfuscated by the tasks to which we believe the story mandates us. The gospel is a story. We should tell it plainly, clearly, and well. Now, having said that, in the way that Marvel and Star Wars spin off a seemingly infinite amount of comment or content based on a small amount of core characters, I find myself wondering, what happened to the people in these towns after Jesus left? We know that some of them followed after him. We know that because the disciples tell him that everyone is searching for him. We know that because in subsequent chapters, the crowds begin to arrive in certain places before Jesus and the disciples even get there. We know that some of them felt called to go follow along with Jesus and the disciples, and they remained in the core part of the story. We know that others also followed along and remained there, but they did it because they were angered or frightened by the instability that Jesus could represent to a people living under the threat of Roman reprisal. And it was not an unfounded fear. By some accounts, 3 million died when Rome finally decided to lay siege to Jerusalem. We know that these people stayed in the story because they show up within the story to challenge Jesus again and again. Eventually, they will send him to the cross that Mark has him so hurriedly rushing towards. I want to know about the people who didn't follow along. They had an encounter with Jesus, one being with the Father through whom all things were made. Some of them were healed by him. Some of them were set free from demons who Jesus doesn't even allow to speak in a very real, natural, and human way. They had a brush with the supernatural, the divine. And like Zebedee, who watched his sons go off with Jesus, they were content to go back about their work the next day, to continue in their own stories. I find it impossible to believe that they were unchanged by the encounter, but our focus on this one story we have to tell often makes us believe they were. In ways both great and small, we Christians often suggest that the story and life of Jesus has only impacted someone if we can physically see the grand change, if they lay down the tools of one life and pick up the tools of another. We love stories of a ne'er-do-well who makes the 180-degree shift and serves the community, or of fishermen who go off to fish for men. We make movies about that stuff. We are less impressed with the mechanic who gets out of bed on just another Tuesday and goes to the same shop they always go to, use the same tools they always use, and still find a reason to do their best work, make sure that every car they work on is as safe and reliable as they can physically make it. Why? Why is the endurance of our daily lives less impressive to us than that one moment of grand change? That endurance can be just as holy. God doesn't need a good car, but our neighbor who God loves does. Some of the people in Simon and Andrew's town, I'm sure, felt called to go join in what the disciples and Jesus were doing in the next town. Some, I'm sure, raised their fist and grumbled about these kids and the trouble they were causing. And they went to set about fighting against it. But I think, and there's no way to know this from the gospel narrative, but I think most likely quite many more got up the next day, went to whatever version of a shop they went to every day, and on the surface of it, the day looked the same. They did the same thing they had done the day before, but now they had a story. They met Jesus. It's only part of the larger story. We need the gospel to place it into context, but it is a part of that story. It is a part of that context. Everything they did from that moment, even the same task they had done the day before, was now different, because they were a part of what we as people of faith claim to be the most pivotal moment in all of cosmic history, the life of Jesus Christ. So, we are to be an invitational people. And I'm not letting go of that this year. I think we, as people of faith, should be. And if we do it well, if we do it clear and compassionately and with hearts and ears willing to listen, there are two things I think we can learn from this story. The first is that people will not always respond in noticeable ways. Jesus can have an impact on our lives that we don't always see. Pushing it until we get a noticeable response that will often be a raised fist and a grumble isn't helping anyone. But the second is this: you who have been baptized, you who gather around the Eucharist at the table, you all have had a very real, very natural, and very human encounter with the supernatural, with the divine. You have met Jesus, and you have a story to tell. It's only part of the story, but it is a part of that story. It is a part of that context. That's your story. It's a part of the most important story in all of cosmic history. Whatever you find yourself doing tomorrow, whether you feel called to some grand new mission over the next hill in your life or simply find the strength for one more day of the work you have already begun, or maybe you wake up struggling for either, you have a story. And if I invite you to join us in worship, I am inviting you to remind us, to let us remind you, to gather with people who remind one another that your story is part of the story. And that's worth telling.